Greetings and welcome to Baron Krause's Visions of Horror, episode number 18, covering the dates of May 1st to May 6th. We started off the show with Ground Meat, and the track was Pathological Silence, which are found on Facebook and Bandcamp. So here on Monday, May 1st, film I started the week off with was Horror Hospital from 1973, rated R, 1 hour and 30 minutes long. On this day, I also saw a film called Death Spa from 1988. If you remember the film Killer Workout from 1987, you're pretty much on the same path, except this has got more blood and splatter. But, hey, I could talk about that film, or I could spend my time talking about a movie that's even odder than that one, and that's 50-year-old Horror Hospital. It's a comedy, horror, sci-fi flick. And the director was Antoni Blach, B-A-L-C-H. He's also a writer, along with Alan Watson. Then starring Michael, I'll screw this up, so I'll just spell this one, G-O-U-G-H. And then Robin Asquith, Vanessa Shaw, Dennis Price, and Skip Martin. It was put out by, Antonio Films, so he put out his own film. Summary for this one is two British companions who meet on a train heading to the rural countryside stay with a bizarre host of characters in a secluded, curious mansion. Unknown to them, there is a sinister secret going on behind closed doors. Isn't there always? I mean, you couldn't go to a nice little mansion anywhere without there being some secrets going on that are quite sinister. Now, it's got a 5.3 out of 10. The original release date for it was May 1st of 1973. Now, we do have a couple taglines, so let's get into them. The operation is a success. When the patient dies. Next. Coma can't equal the shock of Horror Hospital. Then there's the nightmare is about to begin, followed by she's trying to get out, with next being black gloves of evil lay bare the ultimate horror. Wait, we got another one. The ultimate in blood and screams. Here's a long one for you. Nerves of steel and strong stomachs are not enough to face the terrors of Horror Hospital. Oh, my goodness. And then lastly, black gloves of evil silence the screams of horror. Oh, my. Okay, there you go. I think you get it, right? You know, it's just what you got, right? Yeah, just simple. Okay. I mean, that's, I don't know what else to say. Things I get to watch. Anyway, this is that kind of movie, okay? It's beyond bizarre. It is. It's really, look, it's just a kind of another story of a mad scientist who uses rock musicians as guinea pigs for his experiments. I mean, we've had rock musicians being carved up, cut up, sliced and diced in so many movies, it's unbelievable. And here they are once again. I don't know, maybe it's suggesting there's a backlash to the rock musicians in general. Anyway, the cinematographer is consistently superior, we have to say. It's good cinematography. The story is wacky as ever. The score's not too bad, and the lighting's done pretty well. The special effects, well, look, it's 1973, and they just don't measure up. You know, toss it up to the budget, which I don't know if they had a budget. And it's a wacky plot, and it's so-so at times. The acting is a little rough. I'm not going to lie to you. It's not going to be a smooth ride for you by any means. I mean, you can find this film on Tubi and find yourself having some sort of entertainment. I mean, look, there's a little nudity, a little violence. There's some zombies, not much else of interest. The plot again, doesn't really make that much sense. So this is the kind of film that if you get up and you leave the room and come back, it may make sense to you, but you'd probably be even more lost than before. You have to pay somewhat attention to this movie. You can't be on your phones and doing something else. You're going to have to devote some time to the film. There's basically a little person in the film that's mixing a lot of potions and making some puddings and doing some other weird, wacky shit that... I'm just telling you, it is a strange movie. So with that being said, I'm going to leave it right there. I know you guys are going to think I'm cutting you short there, but I'm really not. There's not a lot to go on with that particular film. We're going to be leaving here with a track from a band. I'm going to spell this band's name because I don't want to screw it up. C-Y-R-E-N-C-E. And the track is The Hospital.
Yes, he will make you pay. Oh, yeah.
Hi, welcome to Tuesday, May 2nd. You guys just heard two bands actually play. You had CYRENCE with the track The Hospital. That band is found on Bandcamp. And also the band's name Diet DE. And then we had Rough Grind with the track Dead End Street. And they are found on Facebook and Instagram. So what's the movie? Well, if you're following along with the script on thehardtimes.com under the podcast, then you know the script already. And if not, hey, the movie is The Last House on Dead End Street. From 1973, rated R, an hour and 18 minutes long. You know, in doing some dashing from time to time, I have actually found a house like this. Last house on the left at the end of a dead end street. It was a really whacked out looking house. Just had the message of leave food at door. I did, and I hailed it out of there because I've seen enough horror movies to know that's not a house you stick around at. All right, so again, this film has got a 50th anniversary. It's a horror movie, and the director and writer and a person who starred in the movie and produced it, his name was Roger Watkins. He also starred along with Ken Fisher, Kathy Curtin, Pat Canestrato, and Steve Sweet. It was put out by Cinematic Releasing Corporation. The summary for this film is, after being released from prison, a young gangster with a chip on his shoulder decides to punish society by making snuff films. Well, I guess everybody needs a hobby. This has got a 5.1 out of 10. It was released originally on May 1st of 1973. We've got a couple taglines to share with you, about five of them, so here we go. You bet your ass this is for real. All right. How about this one? It will scare you to death as Funhouse. Now, that was the actual title to the movie. It has multiple titles, but that was one of them, as Funhouse. Not to be confused in any way with the film called Funhouse from 1981. Here we go, another one. It's only a movie. Next is It's Back, the evil that had you screaming. It's only a movie. And lastly, cult classic. Wow. Thrilling tagline. Obviously, a couple of these are playing off of The Last House on the Left. So it's pretty easy to see where they're getting their input for their taglines. I couldn't believe this. I had to verify this twice, but this is actually the budget number. And I'm going to really leave this in here for you all to look at. $1,500. Yes, $1,500 was the budget. You want to talk about low? Whew! Yes, it was. Now, here's where things get even stranger. Yeah, I know. Here we go. Now, it was quietly released under the name The Last House on the Dead End Street to capitalize on Wes Craven's film Last House on the Left from 72. Now, we all could figure that out, right? But wait. All the credits at the time of its release, all the way up until 2000, were fake names. No one publicly admitted to having made this film. Roger Michael Watkins eventually admitted to being the writer, the director, and the star after 2000. But prior to that, nobody, I mean nobody, put this thing down on the resume they wanted to know about or anything else. The film is supposed to depict real murders, or the film was a product of a Mexican mafia owing to Roger Watkins' fake name, Janos. A municipality in the Mexican state of... I'm not even going to try it, so... not even going to try the Mexican state name here, or the city name, I should say. The film's distributor encouraged the rumors and resulted in the film's gaining notoriety via word of mouth for real mafia murders occurring in it, which, of course, didn't happen. But, hey, anything to fan the flames and get people interested in an ultra-low-budget movie. And I say ultra-low, I mean ultra-low. Now, this film is referenced in the video Violence from 1987. It was edited into Through Eyes of the Dead, which came out in 1999. It was featuring Coming Soon in 82, It references Dracula from 1931, The Psychopath from 1966, and Last House on the Left from 72. It's found on Tubi. And let me give you my thoughts about this film. And bear with me because, let's face it, it's a little messed up. How to put this nicely? It's literally one of the most infamous horror movies probably ever made, in the sense that, one, what is on the screen and what's being shown to you, and two, how many people didn't want to have anything to do with it after it was made. I mean, part of this comes from the legend and the mystery surrounding the film that was being made here. It's really difficult to get a hold of this movie. And what would I say by that? You say, well, Baron, it's on Tubi. What do you mean? Well, here's the problem. See, all existing prints are extremely heavily cut. To find one of these films that's not cut is almost impossible. And the print is made entirely with fake credits. It clocks in at only 77 minutes long. And there's really not a lot of information about the original movie, which was around 3 hours long. So that was probably one of the longest running versions available. And then there's only the 77 minute cut. So it's really strange about this one. This is like one of those cult classic hidden movies that you've always heard about. In fact, if you're a person out there that wants to do an interesting documentary, this might be the film to do the interesting documentary on. You know, some of the heavy cuts really leave really large, bizarre holes in the narrative, adding to a strange soundtrack. The lighting is beyond weird. There's empty sets. I mean, it just looks like you're really watching this film to figure out what the hell went on the set. I mean, were they high? Were they drunk? Were they both? I mean, the film is obviously shot on an ultra razor thin budget, which makes you wonder, what did they pay the people with? They must have paid them in, you know, and this is my opinion, drugs, something else. I mean, you wonder what. I mean, it really does run like an underground snuff kind of film that you've always kind of heard about. But obviously, you know, it tries to imitate that kind of creation, if you would. The plot is so thin and so simply weird. I mean, a deranged young man, you know, again, starts on a killing spree of people getting murdered. It's a film that I guarantee won't appeal to many people. It really won't. If you have watched the Serbian film, you know which one I'm talking about, right? Serbia film. If you have seen this film, then if you've seen that film, then this is the one for you. This would probably be the next film in line that you want to go down into that rabbit hole with. After that, I mean, you're talking about the film Inside from 2007. It's a foreign horror film. That would be your next weird journey. After that, maybe my friend Dahmer would probably be your next thing. So you see where I'm going with this, right? If you're going to start at that bottom of the basement thing, then you really know where you want to kind of spend your grimy time with. Again, it's not for everybody, so be forewarned about this movie is all I can really say about that. All right, so with that being said, I'm going to leave you with a band called Black Gate, and the track is Beneath. Welcome to Wednesday, May 3rd of 2023. You guys heard the band Black Gate with the track Beneath. The band is found on Facebook and also through Bandcamp. Well, the movie is pretty easy to figure out. It's called Beneath from 2013, unrated, an hour and 29 minutes long, celebrating a 10-year anniversary. This is an adventure, drama, horror movie. The director for this film is, oh, you guys are going to just love this name. I'm going to spell it. First name is Ben. Last name is Keetai. The writers for this particular film were Patrick J. Dudley and Chris Valzenzio. I'll spell that because I butcher that name all the way. V-A-L-E-N-Z-I-A-N-O. It stars Brent Briscoe, Kurt, oh, I'll say that one out there. That's C-A-C-E-R-E-S. And it's Eric Et Barbie, Jeff Fahey, Molly Hagen, Joey Kern, and Ashway Lover. All right, it was put out by Arrow Films. So at least that was a plus. Summary, a crew of coal miners becomes trapped 600 feet below ground after a disastrous collapse. As the air grows more toxic, time runs out and they slowly descend into madness and begin to turn on one another. This film got a 5.4 out of 10. It was originally released on October 8th of 2013. All right, is a film you can find on Tubi. Now, I first want to tell you that if you've seen the movie Descent, you know this movie. I'm not trying to nitpick here, but that's a very true statement. If you've seen Descent, you know this movie. Now, let's actually get into this. Beneath begins at a retirement party for a coal miner. And at this party, in addition to everyone getting drunk, the man's daughter, who is a college student, is invited down into the mine in the morning to see if she's brave enough to go there. Well, she shows up, and soon the unexpected occurs. There's an accident, and the group of miners, including this lady, are trapped. Now, the film does create a very nice atmosphere, okay? And it's got a very scary feel to it, and the darkness, and plays on a lot of people's worst fears. And, you know, the film does do a good job in generating and building tension and keeping that tension going for as long as it can. Now, how should I put this? Basically, I didn't too much care for the female character. Just something about her doesn't convey for that. You're supposed to feel sympathy for her in the film, but for some reason, and I saw this film with four other people, two of them were women, and they didn't like her either. So I'm like, okay, I'm not alone here in the third. The other person we had there fell asleep. So I don't know really what to call that to, but you know that's how they felt maybe about the film. Just didn't really get them. I mean, they just kind of dozed off saying, it's Descent all over again. I can understand that. I mean, another thing was, it doesn't actually take place in a mine because of the dangers of filming in a mine. So you want to watch a film, if it's filmed in a mine, you want to go watch My Bloody Valentine from 1981. That happens in a mine. But this doesn't, for a lot of different reasons. Number one, probably due to budget concerns, and then just due to the safety factors, because again, that was in 81, this is in 2013. Two totally different structures and what you can and cannot do. And obviously now there's a lot of, hey, there's a lot of can'ts. But again, back to the female character, she just seems more of a plot tool, if you would. Just another set dressing for the scene. It didn't make me feel like a real person the way, and that could have been not maybe due to her, that could have been done because of the dialogue, something wasn't working. I don't know what it was. I know that what they were trying to go for. They were trying to work on each other's nerves in a claustrophobic manner with limited supply and limited air. But if you're going to do that, maybe make the second half of the film where this turmoil is happening, figure out, okay, how much air would be in an X space in a mine for that period of time. And that's what you want to use for that period of time for the rest of the film. This is going to sound really strange, okay? But bear with me. Now, two films used that kind of methodology. One was 47 Meters Down. Not the sequels, the first movie. Where they were running out of air, and they made that running out of air equal basically the film time after they go down into the water. So that second half of the movie equals that. Another way to understand about the use of time in reality to your film, I know this is going to sound so cliche, but here you go. Titanic, the one by James Cameron, right? The sinking of the vessel, he stretches out that entire second half. He's basically stretching it out for the duration of the boat sinking, if you would. The ship is sinking and stretching that time out so you kind of get to work through everything in your head. Kind of an interesting concept, if you would. Would it always work? No. But for a story like this, you got limited everything. I would have gone with how much air and how long until you run out of air. If that means you got to load up the front before you get to the story, then I would have gone with that way. So take it for what it's worth. But there you guys go. All right. So I'm going to leave you with the band Iron Curtain, and the track is Wild and Rebel. Yes, you guys just heard Aaron Curtin with Wild and Rebel. They are found on Facebook, Bandcamp. This goes out to the label Pure Steel Records. Found on Bandcamp, Instagram, and Facebook. So welcome to Thursday, May 4th. And I know you're supposed to say, May the 4th be with you. I don't know why. I never really saw any of these Star Wars movies. Usually the guy who sits down, sees one on, and starts making fun of it. When other people are watching, it's just my way. Don't get upset with me. I just don't find a lot of interest in Star Wars movies. All right. So anyway, this film I saw was Buck Wild. So it kind of ties into the song Wild and Rebel. This film came out in 2013. It's not rated. It's 1 hour and 36 minutes long. 10-year anniversary, a comedy horror film. The director, who also was a writer, a producer, a star on the film, and worked in a whole bunch of other capacities, was Tyler, and that's G-L-O-D-T. Another writer on the film was Matthew Albrecht, I think it's Albrecht. He also starred in the film, along with, a brother whose name Philip, and another brother named Witt, and then they also added in Joe Kranke, Mark Leslie Ford, Meg Connie, or Coney, C-I-O-N-N-I. So there you go. Kind of a get your friends together kind of making of a movie. It was released by Millennium Entertainment. The summary, very short, sweet, to the point. Here we go. A hunting vacation goes horribly awry for four friends after they accidentally shoot the lease land owner. Yep, that could be a problem. It got a 4.7 out of 10. It was originally released on May 4th of 2013. We've got five taglines. Here we go. Hopefully you enjoy these. Three friends, one cousin, and a hunting vacation to die for. All right. Friends don't let friends turn zombie. And it's about to get buck wild. Woohoo! All right, then we get buckled up. And then finally, the hilarious, the hilarious, horrifying zombie comedy everyone is dying to see. Yeah, giddy up. And that's one of the taglines they didn't get. Giddy up. And they didn't say giddy up. Get bug wild. Yeah. No, they didn't use that. They used it's about to get buck wild. No. It should be giddy up. So if you throw that in there, you could have a little bit more fun with things. But they didn't do that. They didn't get down and understand what you gotta do around here. So I don't know what we can possibly do about anything. All right. So really nothing of a trivia note for you all to be concerned about, so don't worry about that, except there was a lot of times in the film that they really were filming it by the seat of their pants, and sometimes that goes really well, and sometimes it doesn't, especially when you're working with a comedy film. Now, let's understand something here. Some of the comedy in this movie is going to be extremely lame and unfunny. Others is going to be crass, not politically correct. So if you're looking for those kind of things, be aware of what you're getting here. The screenplay is severely disconnected and at times thoroughly senseless. There's a lot of offensive material in this. This is not going to have a wide appeal to people that are ultra sensitive or have thin skin. Is it B-horror? Yes. A zombie comedy? Yes. Is the dialogue smart? I would say the dialogue is more smart-ass, with a lot of kind of smart-ass retorts. Basically, if you wanted to think of this movie, you're going to think of this film as, a 12-year-old meets up with a 14-year-old and they're watching the older brother's horror collection from the 18-year-old brother. I mean, if that kind of gives you that feel for what we're talking about. And they invite some friends over, and they age in rank of 13 through 15. You know what I mean? So you get your kind of connotation for who is the film really appealing to. Basically, yeah, you got the zombies out there. I wouldn't say that it's really going to be high up on the list of the zombie crazed fans out there. If you've seen every other zombie movie, then you probably go, yeah, let's watch this. Is it the worst? No. I've seen horrible. I've seen abysmal zombie movies. I have. But this is not going to be on the level of the Italian zombie kind of films. This is not going to be on the level of the George's films. I lost my train of thought there for a minute. You know, the Living Dead series. It's not going to be like that. I would say maybe slightly better than The Walking Dead at times, but The Walking Dead had better special effects. This doesn't. It's just a movie that is really struggling at times. It doesn't offer anything new. It's just, you know, a film that if you want to open some beers or you want to just have some time to kick back, I guess, yeah, you could watch it to complete your trifecta of saying, hey, I've watched every zombie movie out there. Well, have you? Because there's this one for you. I mean, the zombies, their movement, their style, their technique, everything they do is just adequate. That's all it is. It's adequate. You want to watch it, you're going to find it on Tubi or Freevee. All right? So with that being said, I'm going to now leave you with Pounder is the band, and the track is The Evil One. right, so welcome to Friday, May 5th, and you guys just heard Pounder, and the track was The Evil One. They're found on Facebook, also on Bandcamp and Instagram, and thanks goes out to Hell's Headbangers on Bandcamp, Instagram, and Facebook. All right, so the movie was The Evil from 1978, rated R, 1 hour and 29 minutes long. It's celebrating a 45-year anniversary. It's a horror thriller movie. And the director is Gus Trikonis. It's T-R-I-K-O-N-I-S. See here, what else? He was also a writer on the film, along with David Sheldon and Galen Thompson. The film stars Richard Crenna, Jonah Pette, Andrew Prine, Cassie Yates, George O'Halloran Jr., Lynn Moody, and Marie Louise Weller. The film company that put it out was New World Pictures. All right, summary. A doctor buys a Civil War-era dilapidated mansion and hires a few friends to help fix it up, but the mansion hides a deadly secret. It's got a 5.6 out of 10, and the release date was originally May 5th of 1978. We've got three taglines, so here you go. Escape is just a nerve-shredding scream for salvation. Next, witness its awakening. And lastly, the ancient horror slept beneath the old mansion. Dot, dot, dot. Nothing could stop its escape. Okay, the last one is way too long. The first one's too long. I guess we have to go with the second one with Witness Its Awakening, The Evil. So there you go. Now, as for the mansion, it's a real place. And if you wanted to, you could go visit it. You could. All right, now, you have to go to New Mexico to see it. It's the Armand Hammer United World College of the American West. It's an incredible building. The pictures of it are fantastic. How they ever got the chance to film at it is amazing, probably in itself. So be aware of that. The budget for the film was $700,000. And again, at the time, this place was an abandoned health spa and resort. So this place has gone over a lot of things. It's been a school, a religious retreat, a health spa, resort. I mean, it's been a little of everything over all of its time. Now, the stunt double, I guess you would put it, one of the stunt people, Buddy Joe Hooker, burned his face performing a fire stunt in this film, so that is ghastly to be aware of. And some prints of the movie completely omit the appearance of Victor Bruno as the devil. Why? I'll never be able to tell you, because there's no information of why that happens. Just, I'm supposing a reason, if I had to guess. I bet you is where, if you track down, where did those prints get released? Meaning, if they were released more down south, a film like this, they might have decided to omit the devil for the Bible Belt people. Maybe in New Mexico, not to get people totally freaked out by the location, they may have also done it there too. It's pure speculation. I have nothing to base that off of. Just a thought. Now, this film is referenced in Videodrome from 1983, so be aware of that. And you can find it on Plex or Tubi. So, let's get into, I guess, my thoughts on the film. I always call this a pretty nice 70s haunted house horror flick. That's what I would like to call it. Is it modest? Yes. Is it entertaining? Yes. Low budget? Yes. It's got a nice variation on the horror, the horror haunted house. It does. It gives it that. I don't know if it's intentional, but it does bring across that. It becomes a kind of traditional battle, good versus evil. So there's really not a lot of surprises. And really, cliches, they're like a dime a dozen. I mean, there's a lot of them in here. You could have a fun little game counting them all. It's got a at times a nightmarish kind of stranglehold, depending on if you really can let your mind go for this type of film. It grows with a bit of a claustrophobic intention. Then, of course, there's that B-movie schlock stuff you get. You know what I'm talking about. The climax is way, way over the top. Just, you know, goes a little too far, if you would. I'll give you a hint. Hell froze over. And they didn't dress for it. To give you a little thought there, okay? The special effects in the film, believe it or not, they're effective for the time, you know? And think of that, but they did pretty good. And they can hold up pretty well. You know, the title, though, is the problem I really have with the film. The Evil is just a little too simplistic. I just wish there was, like, a better title. You know, Fear the Evil. You know, being fearful of evil. I don't know, something that gave it a little bit more, especially with the taglines not really sinking all the way in there. There's obviously, quickly, you'll find a real good familiarity with the film and the sounds. And you'll be like, okay, I know this movie. I know this movie really well. But yet, it's still fun to watch it and go back and have that moment with it. It's, like I said, it does get its inspiration from The Haunting from 1963. There's no doubt, no question about that. If you've seen that movie, you're going to see a lot of that influence into this film. It's just got a couple ridiculous moments in there, obviously. And it's going to leave you some loose ends that I'm sadly going to tell you right now. You're not going to get them all fulfilled. It's not going to happen. So be aware of that, too. You know, you wonder why these people have been selected in the sense to be sacrificed to the house or to the evil. And that gets interesting. But again, it's not going to fulfill all your questions that you'll probably have at the end of the film. I think that's going to have to be solved by a review from me in long form for you guys to see my thoughts in detail and if I can figure out a lot of these open-ended type of questions at the end of the movie. So that's really about it. There's not a lot more I can say about that. And I know it sounds like I'm giving you the brush off on the movie. I'm really not, because if I talk too much, I'm going to give away the entire storyline. It's really a very simple storyline. But it works for the time period it's put in. It's maybe a little ahead of its path on a couple of elements, but I think it does well. I do. And it's a film I have seen quite a few times. I enjoy watching the movie. I really don't know why. Just something about the film pulls me to it. I could have done away with one major thing. I didn't need to see the spectral form of the ghost. I didn't need to see that. I would have been fine with a disembodied voice just talking from wherever and maybe zip the camera around in 100 different directions so it makes the voice sound like it's all around you, tucked up in a corner, down low on a floor, in the chimney, out of the chimney, up the stairs behind you, whisper in your ear, all the way around. If you swung the camera all those different directions, I think it would have been a lot more interesting. But hey, Nick, again, I say it's take it or leave it. I'm just here to give you that information. All right, I'm going to leave you with a band called Spetro. This is SPETTRO, and the second word in it is family. The track is Undead. We'll be right back. Well, welcome to Saturday, May 6th, the end of the week. It's great that we got to this point. And the music that you guys got to hear was from a band called Spetro. It's S-P-E-T-T-R-O. The second part of that is Family with the track Undead. They are found on Facebook and Bandcamp. All right, the movie is called Dead Heat. I know you're thinking, wait a minute, Baron, you played a track called Undead, and the title of this thing is called Dead Heat. Did you finally run out of music? No, I didn't. I'll explain in a few moments. This film is rated R, 1 hour and 24 minutes in length. All right, now it's celebrating 35 years. It's an action comedy horror movie. The director was Mark Goldblatt. The writer was Terry Black, and it stars Trent Williams, Joe Piscopo, and let's see, that's P-I-S-C-O-P-O, Lindsay Frost, Darren McGavin, Vincent Price, Claire Kirkconnell, and Robert Picardo. The company that put it out was New World Pictures. Now, let's get into the summary for this thing. A cop is killed investigating a strange case of resurrected corpses. His partner and a pathologist resurrect him, but he only has a limited time before he starts to decompose fully, and he uses it to chase down the diabolical man who killed him. This film got a 6 out of 10 and a release date of May 6, 1988. Two taglines. Number one, these cops are on the biggest murder case of their lives, their own. And lastly, you can't keep a good cop dead. All right, now, the budget for it was $5 million. It grossed $3.5. That's right, so it's a lost there. But the film has since become a cult classic. And this film has got a body count of 32, and, now this is get the kicker, was sent to the MPAA 7 times. Each time it got there, it got an X, and another X, and another X, and another X, and another X. And the film really doesn't contain like nudity or anything. I mean, they just kept nailing the film down. Now, the film does reference the Terminator from 1984. Now, let's get into the entire thing. I'm going to first tell you, you can find it on Plex and Tubi. So, what kind of movie is this? This is your buddy cop film. Okay? Over a bed of horror. So, in the 80s, you had a lot of buddy cop movies, Turner and Hooch. Obviously, this, though, is playing more off of Lethal Weapon. It really is. It's pretty clean cut to figure out which of the two lead characters is supposed to be the two leads from Lethal Weapon. It really is. There's no question about it. It's just that kind of film. Now, it does reference, I should say this, the movie DOA, I think that came out in 1950, about a guy who gets poisoned and has a very limited amount of time to figure out why he was poisoned and who did it. And basically, you know, what's the benefit of him being knocked out of the way? That's the same thing that's going on here. Also, this film takes place in the sense that people want to live forever. Immortality, if you would. Perhaps AI is the new form of immortality. I don't really know. It could be. But here in the film, immortality is a way to be resurrected, if you would. You know, there's a film that came out in the 90s called Death Becomes Her. I think something like that. It starred Bruce Willis and Goldie Hawn in the movie. And it plays on the themes like this, by the way. So it's kind of interesting how these all come together. Listen, does it have the action? Hell yes. You can leave your brain at home. Goofy action? Definitely. No question. Comedy? Yep. It's, zombie cops, got a huge dose of humor put into it. Is it fun? Yeah. Is it B-movie? Hell yes. However, I do want to state this. This is not a film you're going to want to watch, let children watch. You see, one of the major opening scenes, and I don't mean to spoil, but I'm going to. One of the major opening scenes. You have two thugs come into a jewelry store, obviously so fake looking, the set, we're not getting there, right? And they're robbing the place. They come out, the police are all out there, there's got to be at least 50 cops with guns. And they open fire. And they shoot a gazillion holes into these two thugs, who basically don't fall down, they keep laughing, so obviously they're zombified in some way. There's a massive gun battle that occurs. Police officers are shot. Police officers are killed. The consequent scenes afterwards, after the gun battle is officially done and so forth, is handled piss fucking poor. I mean, it really is. All these officers are dead and no one seems to really shed a tear, mourn, stamp their feet, do anything about it. It's just, oh, wait, another day at the office. Oh, well, ha-ha, who cares? And that did something to me. It pissed me off. I know I've seen this film before, and it didn't piss me off then, but I've matured. And look, I've got family members that are police officers. I know friends that are police officers. I know them, okay? And, you know, just this kind of shootout, the way it's treated and everything, they have also seen this film. And they don't like that opening scene. They really, really have a problem with it. It's just too over-the-top, gruesome, bloodshed. It's just ridiculous. It really is. And I understand they're just trying to make a funny, funny moment there. But they fail, to me, 100 times over. They really do. That's all I'm really saying there. So be aware of that major factor. Now, look, again, the film does star Vincent Price, although they really misuse Vincent in this movie. They really do. I mean, he's basically just relegated to, what's the word I want to use? Something like 5 to 10 minutes. I mean, he's basically what some actors do today. You know, they come out, they're on set for a day, or they're on set for X amount of minutes or whatever it may be. Get their $10,000, and they're out of there. They don't care two shits about your film. They know that you're going to take their name and put it on the front of the cover of the actual film, and that's that, okay? That's what's basically happened here, all right? And then we got Darren McGavin, who obviously, if you know your stuff, was in Kolchak, the Night Stalker. So if you're aware of that, you're going to have that too. But again, it's got a lot of interesting aspects to the film, yes. It's just that really opening sequence I have so many problems about. They never talk about the fallen officers, and there's never even a moment after that where you see one of the officers wearing the black band over their badge like they would do. None of that's shown. Like I said, that's the one major problem I have with the film. But otherwise, that's really it. I mean, it wasn't a lot of in-depth type of movies, a lot of running-of-the-mill type of films this week. And with that being said, just thank you for tuning in to Baron Craze's Visions of Horror, episode number 18. And we're going to leave you with Bloody Hammers with the track Welcome to the Horror Show. If you got time, please like the Baron's Crypt on Facebook and the Horror Times also on Facebook. Thanks. And let your nightmares continue to watch Visions of Horror. Find your own list, use mine, and enjoy what is out there of the genre.
things wrong, so I behave. The manic priest is waiting, but inside you it's alright. It's okay, shock and shame is so far out of date. Blame is left on all of you to load your guns and tell the truth. Shame was so far out of range. The blame is left on us.